House Committee on Land Use meeting. Committee, I have a question for us before we begin. That is that sometimes when I'm sitting here and we have testimony being given, I have difficulty in hearing the testimony. Now, I don't know because I'm... I'll have that 65th birthday the next time around, but I don't know whether it's me or whether it's the sound system in here. And I can hear this fine.
There's an easy question for the committee and the chairman.
Right. So I was wondering...
What would you like the answer to be, Mr. Chair?
If the committee has similar feelings or whether I need to go get a hearing aid, I guess. That's really it. And I'm only talking about the testimony. That I have difficulty when they're speaking up there and hearing it here. Well, Representative Greenwood joins me.
If we could amplify a little. I mean, I think I don't hear very well from up there.
Do you hear anything?
How high, sir? I'm not crossing you on this one.
Not really loud. But, I mean, well, maybe we should.
It'd be a pleasure.
Why don't we go through the session and you listen to those? And then we'll, I'll ask you the same question after we get done today. So,
that's great.
Because they can put some additional speakers right over us. That might help. So.
It is peripherally noisy.
Yep.
So maybe that's.
Okay.
It's that door.
We'll hereby open a public hearing on House Bill 2268.
Good.
Committee, both of these bills are basically bill of condemnation actions. And both bills are extremely similar. It has been brought to our attention that when we hear both bills, we might possibly want to combine the two bills into one. If that be the case, in looking at the two bills, the clause is a bit broader on 2268, which might permit someone to add something to the bill that we didn't want. And 2355 is written very concisely in that the relating clause reads directly to appraisals and condemnation actions creating new provisions. So we'll take a look at this, and as we get into the work sessions. We'll have a work session on both the bills afterwards to discuss. So we'll begin our public hearing on 2268. And Mr. Administrator, if you'll brief us on the bill and who would like to speak.
Sure. Yeah, I thought we were going to take the other one first, so I was ready for that one.
I'm following the agenda that you wrote, Mr. Administrator.
This proposed bill will amend OSR 35.346, as will the other one. This particular measure, what it basically seeks to do is that in the course of an appraisal, if it's going to rely on written reports or opinions or testimonies, that information report will all be conveyed to the other party in the Condemnation Act. And if it relies on any unwritten reports or opinions, that the name and address and phone number of the person who gave such information would also be provided to the other party, essentially so that there's no surprises later on with how the evaluation number come about. So that would be, this is a pretty particularly short measure on page 3, and at the bottom of page 2 in bold is where you'll find that paragraph, and it's the new paragraph 8. And that essentially is this particular measure.
Okay, and our first speaker on 2268 is Wendy Johnson. Wendy, if you'd come forward. Does Greg Mowatin also come up at the same time? And then I noticed you're both for this measure. So, Wendy, if you'd like to start, good afternoon. The committee will hear you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Wendy Johnson, for the record, from the Oregon Law Commission. I have an attorney licensed in Oregon, but I'm on staff to the Oregon Law Commission. Some of you may be new to the Oregon Law Commission, so I just wanted to provide a brief background on the commission. The commission was created in 1997, and our job is to recommend legislation to the Legislative Assembly. We were created by the legislature to assist the legislature. It's pretty well known that fewer and fewer lawyers are becoming legislators, and our laws need to be improved from time to time, and there are gaps in the law. So that's our role at the Law Commission. There are 13 commissioners. They include the Chief Justice, the Attorney General, a member appointed by the Governor, two members appointed by the Speaker, two members appointed by the Senate President, three members appointed by the Board of Governors of the Oregon State Bar, and the dean or a designee of each of the three Oregon law schools. So it really is a blue ribbon panel of legal experts. Today we have before you House Bill 2268. It is an eminent domain bill. I have Commissioner Greg Mao with us today. He's a commissioner appointed by the Board of Governors of the Oregon State Bar, and his area of practice expertise is condemnation. Greg has been a member of the commission since the beginning, appointed by the bar. This is a consensus bill. It has been recommended by the Law Commission. The Law Commission reviews each of the proposals. We work in work groups, and the commissioners each generally chair a project. Commissioner Mao chaired this project. So for the details of the bill, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Greg Mao. Greg is an attorney at Stories up in Portland, a partner there.
Thank you, Chair Burrard, members of the committee. My name is Greg Mao. I am a partner in the Portland firm Stories LLP, and my practice for the last 15 to 20 years has been predominantly eminent domain. The significance of this particular bill is that the larger context of condemnation litigation is that a condemning body, as part of filing and serving a condemnation complaint, has to provide a copy of the appraisal that the condemning body relied on. 60 days before trial, the property owner must file the property owner's appraisal, serve it on the condemner. And then 30 days before trial, there's a final written offer made. And the significance of the final written offer is that if at trial the property owner, the condemnee, recovers more than the condemnor offered 30 days before trial, the property owner recovers all attorney's fees and litigation expenses, including appraisal costs incurred in litigation. The effect of this combination of events is that the great majority of condemnation cases are settled because the economic consequences to both sides are significant enough that the condemning body has every incentive to make a very fair and reasonable 30-day offer, and the property owner has every incentive to accept a fair and reasonable 30-day offer rather than take the risk of trial. As a result of that, what gets exchanged as part of the appraisals becomes very important. There was a Court of Appeals case within this past year called State versus Stalkup, which defined the term appraisal essentially as any written opinion of value. So we have a definition of the appraisal itself. One of the weak links in the process has been that many appraisers need to rely on a number of other experts. It can be a land use expert, it can be an attorney, it can be an environmental expert if you're dealing with contaminated property. And in order to have sort of a full disclosure of the basis for the appraiser's opinion, and in order to really assess how things are likely to shake out at trial, it's very advantageous to have that information. So this is a process that would work both ways. It would be an obligation of both parties. We tried to not make it too onerous. If people don't have a written appraisal, a written report, that's fine. They just have to say where they got the information so the other side can check it out. And we purposely at one point we were considering using the term any information, and we purposely rejected that on the theory that we're only talking about something that reached the level of being a report, an opinion, or an estimate on which an appraiser was relying. So we believe that this will serve a salutary effect on condemnation practice without unduly burdening the litigants themselves. I'd be happy to answer any questions about the bill or the prior proposal.
Representative Ackerman.
Yes, my question is to either of you. As I read the new section, Section 8, if there's a written report, there's no specific requirement that the name or address of the author of the report be submitted to the other party. If the report is unwritten, then there is that requirement. Don't you think, for purposes of consistency, that in both instances, the author and the name of the author should be disclosed to the other party?
Okay. You are supposing more devious litigators than I had. I believe we were operating under the assumption that in order to be a report or opinion of an estimate, the person making it would need to be identified, and it would certainly be my belief that that would be a requirement. If there's any doubt at all, I would accept certainly the recommendation that at least the name be appended to the written report, because the intent would be to allow the other side not just to know the content of the report, but to know where it came from.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Well, Representative Greenman.
Well, I think this may be where you were. I wondered whether the witness had read the other addition, the other proposed addition to this.
I was going to ask both of you if you would stay until we have heard testimony on 2355 and then see if we can get you both together to consolidate onto one bill.
Thank you. We'll do that.
Great.
Mr. Chair, I'd also like, for the record, to make sure that you've noticed that we did submit the written report from the Law Commission to the committee. That we circulated that ahead of time to the meeting to each of you as well.
Great. How long does that take, Ms. Johnson?
I submitted it earlier as written testimony, but I wanted to make sure that it was noted for the record that we'd like to submit that as written testimony.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, thank you.
Thank you.
We will now close the public hearing on House Bill 2268 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2355 and ask the good representative, Ms. Burley, to come forward, please. Is there anyone you wish to?
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Representative.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you very much. I am Chuck Burley, Representative Chuck Burley from House District 54, which represents Bend. And I also want to thank you for scheduling this hearing on House Bill 2355. This bill addresses appraisal and condemnation actions, creates new provisions, and amends ORS 35.346. I sponsored this bill at the request of Ed Fitch, an attorney in Redmond. Unfortunately, Ed Fitch was not able to join us today, but instead Mr. Joe Willis, an attorney with Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt in Bend, who has been working with Mr. Fitch on this language, is here today to explain the bill, and I believe you have some language for an amendment in front of you, and also answer any questions.
We don't have the information.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I think I have them. Oh. If I can step up and distribute them.
I just hand them to the administrator and she'll take care of it.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, thanks for the opportunity to appear before you. I'm Joe Ellis. I'm a lawyer and a partner of Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt. My home and sometime office is now in Bend. That's why I know Representative Burley. We also have offices in Portland, and I started practicing in 1971 and have always done a significant amount of condemnation, eminent domain work. In the last probably 20 years, that's been over 90% of my practice. Most all of that has been on the landowner side, a little bit starting out for the government. From time to time, I'd be hired by the government when Mr. Mao or some of the other law offices that did their work had a conflict of interest, but primarily for landowners. I saw this, let me fill you in with some other things. I served as a uniform law commissioner from the state of Oregon to the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws. It has nothing to do with this act, but it has a lot to do with drafting bills, and I've served on there since 78, was appointed by 5 separate governors. Now I'm a life member to that conference. I also asked to serve as a member of the work group with Mr. Mao, who chaired it, for the Oregon Law Revision Commission, which is the state that cooperates with the Uniform Law Conference. I participated in his group that resulted in the bill that you just heard. I do have a couple comments about that bill. I'm out of order, but y'all come back to me before I stop. And let me tell you what Mr. Fitch was attempting to do. And that was, if you read the statute as it exists now, and you heard Mr. Mao explain the terms about the 30-day offer, that has very important consequences. Because from a landowner's lawyer's point of view, what happens is the government will make an offer, they'll accompany that with an appraisal report. My experience indicates those are usually very conservative. Sometimes we'll have very arguable positions in them from a landowner's point of view. And then if they try to settle, there's generally saying, look, we have a competent appraiser telling us this property is worth X, and if you have information contrary to that, bring it to us. We'll consider it. It puts the landowner in a position of either hiring counsel or an appraiser or both, spending that money to get the government to the point of moving off of their original offer. I've had successes in varying degrees, depending on the lawyer involved on the other side, but that's a very difficult process if you have an administrator faced with having an appraisal in front of him. Nothing from the other side except the owner saying, I don't think that's fair. So often there will be significant expenses incurred by persons to meet that, and then the government, after having been educated at the expense of the landowner, has the opportunity to increase their offer up to 30 days before trial, and it put a lot of pressure on the landowner to not go to trial, and they may get a fair offer at that time, but it doesn't pay for all the expense they incurred to get it. And so if you think of this as a forced sale, if you can imagine someone coming to you and saying, I'm going to buy your home and I'm going to pay you X for it, you'd have the opportunity to say, no, I don't want to sell it for that, go away. But you wouldn't be forced to spend $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 to defend yourself from that price, to then have them later say, I am going to take it because I'm going to force you to sell it to me through a condemnation process. And after you spending that money, I'll move the price up to where you say, but I won't pay you for the money you expended to get there.
Mr. Lewis, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
The property owner doesn't have any decision at this point as to whether to sell or not to sell. They are going to sell, so the question is only what price.
In the condemnation action, they don't have that choice. It is a forced sale. But it's so unlike the private sector where you don't have to spend a bunch of money to turn down an offer to buy your property if it's just obviously wrong. You don't have to do that. You can say no. But in the condemnation action, you don't have that choice. It is a compelled sale, so you have to go out and protect yourself if you don't like the price. So just a little background on that. Then what also happens is that we had the government who has to start off with an appraiser, and they have to make the appraisal accompanying their offer that starts the condemnation action. And then if a landowner gets an appraisal, they have to deliver it to the government side at least 60 days before trial. Now, then the government has a full 30 days to consider whatever information you provided them in that fashion to see if they want to increase their offer and try to defeat the opportunity to gain your attorney's fees and appraiser's fees back that you spent to get there. That's their 30-day offer. But if you look carefully at the statute, what Mr. Fitch found was that there wasn't enough language in there to control what happens after the initial appraisal and after the landowner gives up his appraisal 60 days before trial. And Mr. Fitch was faced with a circumstance, I understand, that made very minor amendments to a landowner's site appraisal, but the government fought him on that and said he shouldn't be able to do it because it wasn't provided for in the statute, ergo his language. And then what I've done, and I can turn your attention to the amendments now, and I apologize for the form we're in. I did this Saturday without any staff help, and I was working off of a different draft than was the official draft bill before this committee. I provided that draft to Mr. Lidke, so my references will make sense to that draft I was working off of. And if I could just walk through there, one of the things I did to change, I'm sorry.
I just want to ask a point of information about counsel. For some reason, I can't track the proposed amendments to the draft language in House Bill 20.
The comments that you have and that everyone has before them that Mr. Willis drafted, he made them to LC draft 16, looks like 66, not the bill that you also have provided to you. So that's why when you say page 2, line 26, it doesn't correspond because he had written to a draft.
The LC
draft
resulted in this bill.
That's correct. So the words are the same. It's just the way that they put it on a sheet of paper. It just kind of alters and not the exact same lines.
I can't track it, so it's a logistical problem.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and committee members and Representative Ackerman, I apologize. I didn't realize that when I was working on this Saturday. I only had the facts to work off of. I can work with Mr. Lidke following and make sure I can redo that with the actual bill you have, or else I think he has enough information in front of him to accurately run through this. But let me just, I won't reference the lines and section numbers or page numbers, but just the concept. The first thing I wanted to do was to put a time limit in there so that each side had to give the other, if there was any type of a revised or amended appraisal, at least give it to the other side 10 days before trial. And experience-wise, that's been widely varying. Some of the lawyers I work with on the other side of the table have been very accommodating. Many have not been. And sometimes, well, and most of the time if I go to court, I can get an order to require something like that. But going to court for a landowner is very expensive, and so I'd like to have something in the statute that just sets it so everybody knows if you're going to amend your appraisals, you have to do it at least 10 days before trial.
Mr. Willis, during that period, how many times can the government come back and make an offer to the landowner?
Well, they can make offers anytime they want, including an into trial. Sometimes that happens, but to make an offer that will defeat the party's opportunity to regain their attorney's fees and appraiser fees suspended, they must make it in writing to all parties that have appeared in the action, and they must do it at least 30 days prior to trial. So after that, they can make offers to settle, but it will not affect the ability to recoup your attorney's fees and appraiser's fees.
Sorry. Right under Article 2 of the Act, you know, the statute.
What's on this? It's going to be very difficult for me to make that transition for you, Representative Grimmick. I'm sorry. I don't know what the chair's pleasure is. Perhaps I should just redo this and send it to you in writing. I can walk you through the concepts, and then maybe I can do that. I don't want to take your time needlessly.
I think that would be better, Mr. Willis, is to allow you some time to prepare your amendment and come back to this committee.
If I could do that and just run through the concepts very quickly, if you do not try to track it, I'll get them back to you in writing where it'll make more sense to you and I can attach it right to the bill.
Give us the Reader's Digest version?
Yes, I will. And the Reader's Digest version is to put a timeline in there when these things have to happen. Another concept is to stop both sides from making dramatic changes in theory on their appraisals. An example of that happened to me where a city attorney had three appraisers on a piece of property, found no severance damages, which is a term of art, which means the government has to pay for severance damages, and found no special benefits, which is a term of art, because special benefits can be offset against severance damages. Excuse me, Governor.
Mr. Senator,
have you read Mr. Fitch's suggestion, which is now Title 9 in the new Act? Does that do what you're talking about? It's the main amendment to that. Seems to me that does just exactly what you're suggesting.
That was what I was addressing my attention to. But the way it's directed there, it doesn't have a flat timeline within which it has to happen. It doesn't have, in my view, appropriate limits on what the amended or revised appraisal can do. I think of an amended or appraisal of saying, okay, maybe we made an error in a table that was in an appraisal. I've seen that happen before. Maybe we made a typographical error or something in that, but really pretty minor. But changes in theory, whether you say, oh, we used to say there was no severance damage, now we say there is, or they used to say there was no special benefits, now we say there is, those are very difficult major changes. And presented to a lawyer at the time of trial, or some even 10 days before, it would be very difficult to try to meet that and go forward. So that should be prohibited. And if you're going to do any of those sort of things, well, it shouldn't be allowed. You just have to be careful and do your work right in the first instance so you don't mislead the other side. And then another concept in here, and Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this may be an issue for the committee because of the remaining clause. And this has to do with something quite different than appraisal changes, probably, but somewhat related because of the 30-day written offer that the government can make. And I have drafted language that would require the government, if it makes the higher written offer 30 days before trial, to at that time to provide the landowner all the appraisal information that they have, including their review appraisals. And that's to help the landowner assess whether or not they do want to go to trial, because they will know what the government has to work with, so they can decide, will I go to trial or not? Or is this information adequate to let me decide to settle now? I've had very mixed results with working with government lawyers. Some have given them to me, some have fought me like the Dickens and refused to. And it's very difficult to make that decision without it. The other thing I've done is to try to do something to look out for the little guy. And there's a provision in the amendments I proposed that if the condemnation, if the condemnee, the owner, doesn't ask for or put in issue a value of more than $50,000, the government is now not allowed to make that 30-day written offer. Because in those cases, when you have what I call a little guy faced with maybe a $10,000 or $15,000, $20,000 condemnation, $30,000 up to $50,000, and they don't like what the government is doing in their appraisal, but they give them. And if it's under 20, the government doesn't have to give an appraisal. That's another matter. But if it's, so they don't like the price, they think something's wrong. But they're faced with then going to get an attorney, getting an appraiser, and trying to defend themselves after spending that money. If the government can make a written offer 30 days before trial to get a fair offer, they don't get reimbursed for all those expenses. So it's a lose-lose proposition for them, and often they just turn away. And I've talked to so many of these people over the years that I couldn't even count, and they explain the rules to them, and they say, I just can't do that, so they'll accept the offer the government's making. I think that should be stopped. But that may present an issue for you on the relating clause. And if that's the case, I would ask that somehow we even submit a separate bill on it. So, and I have one more minute if I can at the committee's time. So I did serve as a member of the work group of Mr. Mao on the Law Revision Commission work group. And on the bill that you heard just before this, there's two issues that concern me. And on 2268, at the very end,
so you're not here to comment on 2268. We gave an opportunity for people to speak on 2268.
Well, I apologize. I'll see if I can take it up with Mr. Mao.
But we're most interested in the comments you have on 2355.
Okay, and that was they just related to the same thing. One of the things they did in 2355 was also change the same statute. Mr. Fitch had laid the whole statute out, and that's what got me going on all that, Mr. Chair. And then, and I'll do my very best to get those changes made accordingly so that you can follow them through and get them right back down to you.
Any further questions from the committee? Representative Ackerman.
Yes, I apologize, but I'm still lost in this analysis. But getting back to new Section 9 of House Bill 2355, are you suggesting any changes in the boldface there, or are you standing on the language as submitted?
No, there would be changes in that language too, Representative Ackerman.
sort of time period there?
There would be, just a moment, I...
Right now, it's any time before a trial. Are you suggesting another timeline?
Yes, I was suggesting a 10-day before trial time limit, and suggesting a limit that would stop what I would consider just minor changes or revisions.
Right, it was all one, Mr. Chairman. How do you propose to define the words substantial change, close quotes, in the proposed legislation?
Well, what I did was go about it backwards. I just said that it should not include, and I listed changes in highest and best use, which is a major thing in a condemnation case, changes in service damage, changes in special benefits. And I did it that way because those are the largest concepts that would present the biggest problems. And I tried to set that out as examples that would give a trial court guidance to look to see if that had been substantial.
Thank you.
Any further questions from the committee?
I'll ask both of you gentlemen the same question I asked Ms. Johnson and Mr. Mao. It's obvious you both want to do the same thing and achieve the same purpose. Would you have any problem in putting your bill in with their bill and combining it in their bill?
I would not.
Nor would I, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Anyone else wish to testify? Thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony, Representative. Anyone else wish to testify in this regard? Please come forward. And you're Mr. Deppenbrook?
Deppenbrook, Mr. Chairman.
Deppenbrook.
I'm an assistant attorney general.
If you'd identify yourself to everybody, we'll get started again, so thank you.
My name is Al Deppenbrook, members of the committee. I'm an assistant attorney general. I principally represent the state in condemnation cases. That's what the attorney general has me do with most of my time. I've been doing that for about 8 years.
Thank you.
I've submitted written testimony, which is negative on 2355, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My principal, or the principal agency of the state that acquires property by condemnation, is the Department of Transportation, though occasionally other agencies exercise the state's power of eminent domain to obtain property. A few years ago, we obtained property for some prison sites for the Department of Corrections, and from time to time, there are other agencies that are needing property that can't obtain it by a voluntary purchase. But I would say that of the 1,200 parcels that were acquired in the last 2 years, on the order of 1199 is the Department of Transportation, just for your information. And they use the power of eminent domain, and I think they need to, and I think other agencies may also, where you have something like a railroad or a pipeline or a telephone line or something like that that you're trying to locate. And if you don't have something like that, then you would be putting any property owner along the design line in a hold-up position. So that's what we do. The Department of Transportation has a group called the right-of-way section, and they've been very effective at working with property owners to resolve these cases. Of the 1,200, we have actually had to file condemnation cases in something like 7.5%, if I'm doing my math right. And we've gone to trial about twice a year in the last 2 years, or something like 1/3 of 1% of the cases. We are making every effort to resolve the cases fairly and as early as possible. The department sends questionnaires out to the people they've worked with to say how they're doing, and over the years those questionnaires have come back a high percentage, in the 90% rate positive. As far, you know, are questions being answered and are we dealing with you fairly, those kinds of things. I think we have improved condemnation law by requiring appraisal exchanges. That came about in 1997. My basic theory is that we get better justice if each side in a condemnation case knows what the other side is going to say and has a reasonable opportunity to check it out, and then if the case shouldn't settle, that usually settles cases, but if the case shouldn't settle, that they can each present their case to the jury. I'm viewing this language in 2355 as taking away the discretion that a judge would have had in the past. The practical matter is that when you're really going to try a condemnation case, both sides tend to prepare rather intensely at the last minute because most cases do settle, and so you don't want to spend your resources ahead of time. And you do find things out, and sometimes you could have found them out earlier, and sometimes whether you could have or should have or might have is kind of a matter of opinion. But we have trial judges, and they make those kinds of decisions in every kind of case every day. And I'm looking at this legislation where it says that changes can be made apparently without the trial judge, and I'm thinking that loosens the requirements of the parties to adequately disclose what they have. They can disclose one thing and then pro forma and then disclose the real thing quite a bit later. And I don't think that's good policy. I think that the appraisal exchanges have, as I remember 1997, I'm thinking we filed something like 91, or about 9%, where we're now at 7.5%, and we tried something like 1%, where we're now at a third of a percent. So we're pushing, trying to get it better, and I don't want to see us go backwards. So that's my view of this. We've got a good bill, I believe, from the committee that Mr. Mao presented. I think this competes with it, to some extent takes away what it has. So I would recommend that this bill not pass and that the committee's bill be the one that proceeds forward. Maybe the relating clause for this bill is better, and you could take the committee's bill and put it under this relating clause somehow. But I'm thinking that would be the preferable way to go.
Any questions from the committee? Ms. Brown?
Thank you. Chair Garrard, members of the committee, my comments are really procedural, and that is that we had a process which involved a work group with condemnors, condemnees, and a fairly broad representation. We did consider a number of timing issues, and we considered a somewhat similar issue to the proposal made by Mr. Fitch in House Bill 2355. Ultimately, the work group decided not to push those forward, and I recognize that doesn't in any way bind this committee or the legislature, but as a matter of process, I guess I would welcome the opportunity for reconvening our work group, perhaps before the next work session, if there is another work session of this committee, and take a look at Mr. Willis's proposed changes, which I have not seen yet, and also consider whether the work group wishes to revisit any of its positions in light of this bill. I frankly can't speak for the work group because they have not as a whole looked at House Bill 2355. I would defer to Wendy Johnson on the issue of which bill should go forward. I know that the Oregon Law Commission somewhat jealously guards its bills, but I recognize, again, that's not totally our prerogative. So,
Ms. Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Garrard, members of the committee. The Law Commission is kind of a unique entity. We understand that we're in the political process just as anyone else is, but I would remind the committee that we were created by the legislature to assist the legislature. We try to take on non-political issues, and we try to present a consensus bill, but for the most part, but those that represent good law reform that don't have the type of lobbying issues. There are some exceptions to some projects we've taken on, but generally our bills have passed with great success and a very high percentage. If we substitute our bill into House Bill 2355, we will lose the sponsor language at the top of our bill, which is insignificant at times, but it's also very significant when people have come to trust the Law Commission and the bills that we present. in addition, if our bill is combined with this other issue that doesn't have consensus, it puts the Law Commission in an awkward spot because the Law Commission has recommended a piece of legislation that now has been combined with something else that the Commission hasn't recommended. Not to say that it can't be explained on the record each time, but it definitely would make the process awkward for us.
Any questions? Representative Wheeler.
Yes, sir. I have a question of Wheeler, perhaps, of our administrator. 2268 seems relatively non-controversial. What's the process if we pass an amendment to that statute and then later in the session pass another amendment to the session? Does that cause problems? Does that confuse the issue? Because otherwise, I would suggest we just go ahead and pass 2268 and then come back with other changes unless there's a problem.
I have to admit I've been persuaded primarily by Mr. Devenbrock's testimony that 2268 is probably the better vehicle for us to be looking. That's why I agree with you, Representative Greenlee. What I'd like to see and get input from the committee is to perhaps allow your work group 30 days
sure.
to get together with the 2355 people and nothing like reversing yourself, but I am, and take 2268 as the primary bill, see what we can do to Mr. Willis's concerns with you in incorporating them in a way that's acceptable to 2268. How does that sound to you folks?
Chair Garrard, Greg Mell, that would certainly be acceptable, just depending on how much time we have before your next session on this bill.
What would be an appropriate amount of time for you to meet, get the work group together and to meet with Mr. Willis?
Mr. Wells, could I speak to his schedule? I know the Law Commission meets again, I believe, on the 14th.
17th.
The 17th of February, so we would need to have our meeting prior to that time, a work group meeting prior to that time.
Would approximately 30 days be sufficient time, or do you need more?
That would be sufficient for the work group to get together, sure.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Norman.
I think your suggestion that the parties with slightly different takes on what they want to do to this part of law should get together, but I'd also hope that should they not be able to agree on a way to combine these two bills, that this committee would still be receptive to passing 2268 as it is. And then we can take up the other bill, and it might or might not pass on its own merits, but I would hope we wouldn't drown one just because they can't come to an agreement on how to combine them.
It's an excellent suggestion, Representative. And I'll assure the committee members that the bill we'll bring back for work session at this point will be 2268.
Okay.
All right, that we will work on that bill. And if I may ask Mr. Willis and Representative Burley to come back up. Mr. Willis, Representative, will you have any problem with getting together with Mr. Mao and Ms. Johnson and seeing if we can work your concerns from 2355 into 2268?
I don't have any problems with that. Not at all. I think that's an excellent suggestion. I don't think the timing will be a problem for me.
30 days is a sufficient amount of time. Any questions from the committee? Thank you both very much. We appreciate the cooperation of all the parties. What we'll ask you to do, this committee would like you to report back to it in approximately 30 days. We will hold the work session at that time on 2268, and I encourage the parties to get together and come up with a good bill that will achieve what all parties are concerned with. Okay, thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further comments from the committee? We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2355. Sam, you were going to get copies of letters from county commissioners.
Yes.
To the committee today. Committee, late last week, I was informed by several counties, primarily Jackson County,
this is in regards to Measure 37, that they were going to begin processing claims this week on Wednesday, and that DLCD had sent out what they felt was a very intimidating letter to the counties. In response to that, I asked the director of DLCD, Mr. Shetterly, to supply me with copies of those letters. He has done that, and I believe we're prepared to give you copies.
In about the time it takes to go back upstairs to get them, their photocopy, they're just left on the desk.
Are you going to run up? Committee, we will have copies of those letters to our to the Jackson County. Actually, these letters went out from DLCD to all commissioners. There are two sets of letters, and the concern here is that the counties are very concerned that if they award a claim based on a local government jurisdiction, that somehow at a later time a state jurisdiction may be involved, and therefore the claimant will be turned around and directed to file another complaint with the state. So this comes down to an interpretation of Measure 37 of, does Measure 37 give local county officials the choice to override the land use decision, or is it the entity that made the law the only entity that is allowed to change the law? The counties are interpreting and saying Measure 37 flat out says it can be changed, regardless of who did it, if it violates the individual's rights. So we will have that discussion on Wednesday with Mr. Shetterly of DLCD. Then the following Monday we will have the counties come in and explain their position. This committee has purposely not put both feet in the water on 37, awaiting for some of the air to clear so that we could get a direction. But in all fairness to the entities, the government entities, they're now at the 60-day mark of the 180 days, and if this legislature is to help in any way with Measure 37, we need to get going. So this committee will begin next week much more intense investigation of Measure 37, much more testimony while we go along at the same time in taking our land use bills as they come before us. But we've sat on the sidelines for a while, and now we're going to get in the game. So I thank you all. Is there any comments about, do we have those letters?
Yes. Yeah, I think they're.
Okay, before I adjourn, I want to make sure. We will not meet this Friday, okay? But this may be the last Friday you have off, so in that regard. But again, that will depend on the load of bills we have, etc. As long as we can continue to do it on a Monday, Wednesday basis, we will do so. Okay, there you have the top letter dated November 26th is a letter to all counties, and then a follow-up letter from the AOC, and then a copy to Mr. Henning, who's the chair of the Jackson County Planning Commission, on interpretation. If you will, take a look at those letters prior to Wednesday's meeting so we can be prepared for Mr. Shetterly and his response. I thank the committee. Is there anything further any committee member has? Oh, how about the sound? Does anybody feel that we need to put speakers up here, or are we okay with everything?
Sounded better to me.
Yeah, it sounded different today.
Sounded a little louder today.
Yeah.
A little bit.
There's less noise out in the...
Yes, Ms. Ludwig.
Mr. Chairman, I will note that when you're giving testimony, it's hard because there's a lot of feedback sitting here as well to hear yourself as well as hear the comments.
Okay. Thank you, Linda.
Did Lindsay have a... Was the volume turned up a little bit today?
We have a little bit.
I think we'll give you instructions. If you will talk to building maintenance or whomever, ask them to evaluate the sound again in this room to better enable hearing from the dais and from the
Committee, I thank you, and see you on Wednesday. We are adjourned.